Hello, I'm Daniel Afonso. I'm the Senior Vice President of People and Culture at Radisson Hotel Group, and welcome to my SMAC episode.
Hi, dear SMAC community, and welcome back to my very first episode of Season 6. We're kicking it off with a few topics that are very dear to my heart. I had the chance to talk to Daniel Afonso, Global Senior Vice President of PNC at Radisson Hotel Group, about personal development, career planning, and the power of empathetic and inspirational leadership. It's been one of my favorite conversations on the podcast so far, so I don't want to keep you waiting any longer. Enjoy the show. Well, welcome, Daniel. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show. And I would say, let's dive right in.
Perfect.
As you know, many of our listeners are either students or young professionals. So usually I start the episode by asking, how did you decide, you know, to go down your career path? And so in your case, I would just simply ask you a very easy but very open question. What drew you to people and culture? How did you decide to walk down that path?
You're right that everyone has a different journey to arrive at their careers. In my case, I matured quite late. So when I was 18, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And I took studies on finance, and business and finance, because I thought that would open doors for me. But actually, through my first 3 years, I was a bit lost. On year four of my studies, I started reading some books on management, and I realized that everything that had to do with people and people management was really drawing my attention. And I fell in love with the topic. So once I finished my business studies, I took a master's in HR, and then the rest is history. Ever since then, I've been involved in people and culture and loving every day of it.
But I mean, that sounds great. And I think 18 is not that old. I mean, you know, you found your calling like through your first like bachelor studies. So that's actually, you know, what we all wish for in a way. So I think you did well. And I mean, it worked out, right? Like you started out in this field and you've enjoyed it ever since. And you've seen very different industries because it's very applicable to very different companies and very different industries, right? In the end.
Absolutely. At the end, HR, people and culture is very broad. And there's a lot of things that you can do within the profession. I started doing mostly compensation and benefits stuff, enjoyed developing systems and being creative wherever I could, worked as a consultant, then moved into talent management, a bit of learning here and there. So yes, you can do a lot of things within HR. And one thing that I think I was very lucky was that I was able to travel. I got opportunities to live abroad. I've always been quite bold with those things. I don't know where it comes from because I don't consider myself a very bold person. But whenever they called me up and said, hey, there's an opportunity to take a job in the UK, I was immediately like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And there's an opportunity to take a job in Brussels and travel to the Middle East. And I was like, yeah, sure, that sounds great. And so I think I jumped onto those opportunities and that has given me a very rich, I'd say, career across industries and across geographies.
And was it more, do you think like the reason why you always said yes off the bat, was it more like, oh, I'm excited by this adventure and like living in a different country? Or was it like the tasks of the position that you were gonna take on? Or was it more also like, because in people and culture, you work with human beings, right? And so that changes drastically probably as well when you change the cultural surrounding in which you are operating. So what was the main kind of, I mean, I assume it was different for different positions, but you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think it generally was this belief I have that doing something different will bring you insight and new experiences, and having, you know, this year be the same as last year and the same as the previous year, it's just not the life I wanted to have. And so an opportunity to live in a different country with a different team, a different challenge, always gave me this impression that, okay, I'm gonna experience something completely different. I'm gonna become someone else. Mm-hmm. I've always had this notion that life, and particularly like professional careers, is a process of becoming. You're always becoming something new and different. And the notion of remaining steady or stagnant was never an appeal to me.
Wow, that was a very very catchy phrase. I feel like we're gonna use this to advertise this episode, because it's so true. I completely agree. I mean, I have still a very young career, let's say. I'm still at the beginning of everything, but it's true. Like the idea of becoming and always growing, right? That's like at the core as well of like learning and development in the end. Like you're always transforming into a better version, hopefully. And that's what we're trying to also probably, you know, help other people do, like around us, see and do in the end.
Absolutely. If you think of yourself 5-10 years ago, you were a different person. So we become an evolving time. And I think that's also a way to think about who we are today and not get too fixated on things. And the way we are today is not a permanent state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we can change it, right? Like we are the people that have the power to change our own life, career, like everything. And I think sometimes we need to be reminded of that a little bit.
Absolutely. There's one thought in relation to careers that I like, and that is the notion that if you were to live your career again, if I was to tell you today, so when you wake up tomorrow, you're going to live your entire career up until today again and again. And again, would you be happy or would you be horrified? And if you were horrified with the idea, then what does that tell you about what you have to do with your career? And I think this is based on a concept of eternal recurrence, which is a philosophical challenge. But I think it's very pertinent to careers. Mm. Because sometimes we get ourselves stuck in places and hoping that something better will come. But this is the one career we have.
Yeah. And I think what plays into this as well is this idea of, I'm going to have a shit time now, but it's all going to be worth it in X amount of years. Like I'm going to do this now, but it will pay off because I will end up in this position or at this company. And I think that's such a dangerous way to think, because then you are, if you're not enjoying your current job or your current everyday life, like, you are taking away from your energy levels. You are taking away from your performance, like how you could be performing, and you are standing in your own way at the end. So I always have an issue with this, like, it's okay. I'll just do this, although I hate it. But then in the end, it will be worth it.
Yes, it is a difficult question, because we do move between extremes and we do move between tensions. And you will read some literature around careers that talk about being hugely engaged with your career, like full on high commitment. And the more, let's say, stakes you put in your career, the more you would invest in not failing. And then you read another book that tells you actually chill, take space, you know, step back. And sometimes we're torn between the two. It's like, okay, well, I read one book, I read another. What should I follow? And I think my personal take on that is that those are the type of tensions that we confront every day. And you have to decide in what level of that spectrum are you sitting, and where do you want to sit? Because sometimes you want to dial up the pressure and you want to dial up the emotional commitment on a job because it's giving you something back, or because you're investing into a step that you want to take. And sometimes you want to dial it down because you have a side project that is exciting you more, or because you're tired, or whatever the case. And we have to be okay with that, as long as you understand that you are dialing up and dialing down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As long as you can like zoom out and have that self-reflection in the end, right? Because I feel like if you know, hey, I'm on purpose not giving 120% because I choose to prioritize other things, then that's a very different view on it than saying, oh, why can I not deliver this and this and this? Like, why am I not giving my all? And what does it say about me? And then you're like questioning your self-worth, and like you're spiraling, right? But then it's not, like you said, it's normal that you go through phases, especially also, I don't know, if you're starting a family, or if you have a death in the family, for example, or like just there's so much impacting you as a person on the whole level, that of course you cannot bring the same amount of energy every day to work for, I don't know, how long is a career? 50 years. That's just not realistic in the end.
Absolutely. And I think you have to understand what decisions you are making. Because sometimes we make decisions by not making decisions. But at the end, exactly, you know, but this dialing up or down at the end is a decision. You decide to spend more time with family, you decide to spend more time in the gym, or whatever it is that you're doing, and you decide to spend less time working in your job or finishing that PowerPoint presentation at night or whatever it is that you used to do a year ago. Mm-hmm. But at the end, those are the decisions. And I think it's very important when it comes to careers, there's one thing that most books will tell you about is that you have to start with some level of self-awareness and understanding mm-hmm. not only where is it that you want to go, but what kind of a person are you? What things do you like? How do you operate? Where does your energy come from? And so on. Because at the end, all of those decisions, you want to make sure that they align with where you want to go and what is it that you like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we just talked about a little bit about, you know, your own career and how you were lucky enough to like work in different countries and also different companies from different industries. And of course, you know, I'm curious to know how you did end up in hospitality in the end, if it was more a rational choice or if it was like a surprising, not, I don't want to say accident, but like coincidence maybe. So yeah, maybe you can share a little bit about that.
It was part accident and part a chosen path. The hospitality industry brings three things that I love in jobs. The first one is that it's an industry with a product that you can touch. I think that really drives my passion in my career because you can very quickly see the outcome of your effort. The second thing is that it's a fast-paced industry, very affected by what's going on in the world, affected by technology, and very fast paced. And the second and the last one is that it's driven by people. A lot of the people that come into hospitality come because of a passion for the profession. It's quite a vocational profession. What people you find in hotels, working in the kitchens, working in front office, wherever you go, they just love the hotel life. Mm-hmm. And many of them, you sometimes find people, of course, that come and go, and maybe they're 6 months in the hotel and then look for a career somewhere else. That's fine as well, of course. But sometimes you find people who've been 30 years in the same hotel, mm-hmm. and they love it. For them, it's like their home. Mm-hmm. And other colleagues are like their family. Mm-hmm. And I think hotels have played such an important, you know, piece in people's lives. That really attracted me to the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone can relate to it, right? Because everyone is kind of traveling in some sort, some a bit longer and farther away, some closer to home. But like everyone knows what it means to stay in a hotel or to go to a restaurant to experience that service that you just mentioned. And what you were saying as well about, you know, people coming into the industry because of their love for other people and like them wanting to create this experience for other people, that really connects you with your coworkers. And in the end, like you're all working in like a best case scenario, I'm saying, right? I know that not everyone, you know, like you were just saying, like some people just fall into the industry because it's also quite easy to get started in some kind of position and role. But the ones that do stay and that the ones that do find it to be like their own little universe, it really is like this. You whenever I worked in a hotel, like your team, they become your family. And it sounds so cheesy, but it that's just how it is, because you spend so much time together and it's in this closed kind of environment where you go into the hotel and that's your world. And then you step out in the evening or in the morning, depending on your shift, and then it's a different world. And I've always really loved that.
Yes, and it has this element of performance as well, where you're in the back of the house and then you come out and it's coming on stage. It's like coming on stage, and all the stories of the guests, and it's just wonderful. I think people get addicted to it. Many people come into the hospitality or the hotel industry, and then they just don't want to go back to anything else.
Yeah, that does happen. Then you're like, oh yeah, I'll do this for a year, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh wow, this is actually really nice. But then the hard part is, for, you know, I mean, you know better than me, but to keep the right people in the industry, and because we are facing, I mean, with COVID even more, but even before, it's not an easy industry to work in. There's a lot of hardship or like difficult, like things to it that make it hard to keep good people within the industry to show them how it could work, you know. So I think that's of course something that that must also be a big topic for you every day. How do you retain the right talent, and how do you show a path for these talented employees?
The obviously the COVID pandemic was terrible in every way for the hospitality industry, as you would have spoken in other episodes of the podcast, I'm sure, was quite dramatic because we had to close doors and close hotels and send people home for long periods, etc. And a lot of people, I think, left the industry and moved into retail and other industries and found a career there. But many came back. And you're right when you said that the doors of the hotel industry are very wide. It's not difficult to come in. And I think that's one of the things that I love about this industry, is that it is a wonderful way for anyone who wants to have a career, whatever the background. You don't have to come from, you know, a fancy school in the US or in the UK, or you can come from anywhere with any type of background. That if you have the right attitude and really want to get a career, the hospitality industry will take you on a fantastic ride. You know, you can grow, you can try different departments, you can move internationally. Hotels exist in the most remote of places. So you can you know, have a few years in a hotel in a big city and then go to a you know, a resort in an island. And so you get a very rich experience in terms of culture, but also in terms of different positions, etc. And there's such a healthy mobility in the hotel industry that I don't know that I've seen it that much in any other industry. Many other industries, you see that people, you know, sit in a very technical department and they never move out of it. Hotels, I think, because we come from that place where people have moved around, we have a habit of being much more flexible in that sense.
You mean also within like departments, and like if someone, you know, shows interest in moving into rooms from a more of an F&B background, that is more possible in a way, because you feel like, yeah, maybe you're in one world in anyways, and you, because it is very different, right? Like someone has been, I don't know, a waiter and then a shift leader in a restaurant, and then he expresses interest in moving to the front desk. Like I have also seen this happen in some hotels where management is like, no, it's not the same, so you can't. Where I've always been like, no, but why would it not? Like you can always train for skills. In the end, like if someone's very motivated and it wants to stay in the hotel and just grow within the hotel and the team, why would you not, you know, at least give them a chance to see if that works? Because of course it's different. You work more, let's say, with programs and with a computer, but you can learn these things.
We are running, as we speak, we're running Career Month. And this is the second year that we run it. And this year, what we have done is quite heavy activation in hotels. And one thing that we're trying is this idea of experimenting. Because sometimes we think about career changes as very large steps. So I spent 10 years in front office and I'm going to take a huge risk and move to food and beverage. And like I'm going to completely close one door and completely open another. And I think when we look at career changes in that way, they become very intimidating. Mm-hmm. And we then perhaps choose never to do it because we are like, I'm not going to take that risk. So what we're trying to do in Career Month is trying to get people to experiment, because you try a couple of days in F&B in the restaurant and maybe you say, actually, I kind of like this. Or you say, well, it looked really, really interesting, but I can't find myself, you know, waiting tables or working at the kitchen or whatever it is. So we need to get much more agile and flexible in giving people that visibility, those opportunities to test things out. because we have projects, we have systems that we implement, processes that we put together, hotels that we open, where we have opportunity to give people those small experiences, where they could say, actually, I love this and I'd love to move, or, okay, that wasn't for me, I'm going back to my old job. And that's, I think, the way in which careers need to start evolving, which is much more, much less of a dramatic move from one to next, but actually trying out, testing out, maybe even for a year, then coming back. Also, I think jobs are becoming much more hybrid. So we're seeing more hotels, some of these, let's say, smaller modern hotels where you have the check-in desk and the bar in, you know, in the same location, and the person who does a check-in is putting a beer to the guests who arrived an hour ago. Those jobs, those kind of mixed jobs, are popping up everywhere. And so you're right, the skills, I mean, that to me proves that the skills are completely transferable for many of these professions.
Yeah, I mean, in both companies that I worked for the past few years, Zoku from Holland and Ruby from Germany, that's exactly what it is. You have the sidekick, how it's called at Zoku, and the host, how it's called at Ruby, where they are the ones that bring you the coffee in the morning for breakfast. They are checking you in. They are also giving you the drink in the evening at the bar. So it's really these very hybrid roles that allow the employees to also see and learn like what they enjoy the most, which has always been stated as one of these amazing opportunities as well from the employees' perspective, because after, I don't know, 1 to 2 years or even 6 months, they've maybe realized, oh, I actually really enjoyed this part and I want to go deeper into this direction. And then they found that out and can maybe also somewhere else, you know, do a proper bar training, become like the best bartender in the world. And then not stay with the company, but still they've learned this about themselves with these hybrid roles. Whereas before you had to like decide, okay, I want to do this, and you're not being as exposed to the other functions. And then, like you said before, you maybe get also a bit scared and intimidated. Could I actually do this? I don't know, because it looks so hard and difficult. And so, yeah, it's really, really interesting to see that kind of movement. But also one thing. Yeah, sorry. No, go ahead.
I think it helps also for us to think of these jobs not as boxes. I think the more traditional hotel industry was perhaps looking at the receptionist or the waiter as a very, let's say, well-defined box within which you had to operate. And anything outside of that box was not for you. And because of the way technology has advanced, because of the way the expectations of customers have advanced, and many other factors, we actually want our employees to think out of the box and to act out of the box and actually expand the box, you know, come up
there
with
ideas. There is no box.
Or break the box, you know, even. So try new things out, create their own job, find ways in which to improve processes, give customers a better experience. And so these hybrid jobs, I think, are also helping us think that way.
Do you sometimes get pushback from management or like higher levels, like, I don't know, regional level or area managers that say, oh, I don't know, this experimenting in other jobs, this is like going to have an impact on our operations and our efficiency, on our service level. Let's not do this.
I think I'm very lucky in that Radisson is a very progressive company in that sense. And management is really open to this type of innovation and is ready to experiment. With this type of things, of course, you have to pilot, experiment, try, finesse, etc., and make sure you understand which hotels you're trying it on. But they're very open to it. Sometimes, of course, depending on the country, you will hit with legislation or work council, which are, you know, they're playing their role in trying to protect employees and their rights, etc. And of course, you have to make sure that you go hand in hand with them. But I'd say generally, no, I think people are quite keen to evolve the industry. I think everyone's excited with where this is going and how technologies, etc., are changing the landscape. You know, customers checking in by themselves, the keys on the phone. I mean, stuff like that is going to change the industry and it's going to change the jobs in the industry for sure. So no, I think if management would be resistant to these changes, then we'd be out of business quite quickly.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, these are the conversations that you also sometimes probably have to like fight a little bit over. But it's definitely the way to go. I 100% agree with you. And now
You
you
can't go
said.
wild. I mean, the operations at the end, hotels have to be profitable. You have a GOP target. You have to run it for the owners, for the employees, etc. Keep the operations healthy. And sometimes hotels can be a very delicate balance. That, of course, taking risks is a challenge, and you're putting a lot of things at stake. But you know, if you go with caution, you have to experiment. You have to move on.
It's kind of like the short-term goal versus the long-term goal, right? So it's balancing the, okay, on the short term, maybe this is going to be a bit rough for like a week or so, but then on, in the long run, if a person like then sees, oh, I could develop into this direction and actually becomes an inspiring leader and gives back so much to the operations that it all paid off in the end.
That's very clear, and you're right. At the end, in hotel, but I think in any business, long term, short term, sometimes are seen as playing against each other. You know, short term EBITDA things and long term investments, but they're part of the same game at the end.
And now you mentioned a lot of things that you love about hospitality and that you know make us very special, let's say. But of course, I'm also interested to know if there's something that you've seen, you know, in other industries and other jobs that you've held that you are now applying to, like in your job now, that we can learn from other industries or companies that are doing something very very well that we, you know, still have to implement a little bit in our mindset or in our day to day.
I think in general, across industries, when it comes to HR, my sense, and of course I haven't been in all industries and so on, but I think we're generally quite similar, and we all use similar talent management processes, similar learning and development tools, etc. Surely there's industries that are more resource rich. So if you go to a bank or pharmaceutical companies that traditionally have had larger pockets to invest, then obviously they will have, I don't know, perhaps a bigger investment in people technology, and a bigger investment in leadership development and so on. But I think the hotel industry has been very, I don't know, very resource savvy. So we do a lot of things with little. And I think it just plays on the ingenuity of the people that work in this industry, and that's great. So I think no, I can't think of anything that I've learned in other industries that I see the hotel industry failing on. No, I think perhaps the only piece that did strike me a little bit was regarding diversity. And when you look at the position of general management in hotels, which is a beautiful position. I think the job of a GM in a hotel is one of the best jobs in the world, because you are the queen or the king of the castle. You have a building where you will have your team, the guests, technology issues, maintenance, and you're managing that small world that is the hotel. And it's a lot of fun. It's hard work. A GM role is really hard work. But I think once you've tried it, people don't want to let go of it. You know, once you become a GM, you're a GM for life, almost. And when I arrived in the hospitality industry, I was looking at the gender, presence in the GM position, and it's very low. Obviously, it varies depending on the markets that you look at. But generally speaking, when you look at LinkedIn Insights data of GM positions in hospitality, and the tool gives you the percent of men and women, the percent of women is very low. Some European countries, you can see 20% women. If you go to Asia, some countries will have like 15% women. Very, very low. And I think it's a job that we need to work on hard to make it attractive for women, and to make sure that whatever barriers we have met in the past to make that happen, we put them down.
And are you already working on this currently, or are you still in like the analysis phase? Or because it's such a big topic, and there's so many factors that play into this, that it doesn't seem too big to attack. For sure not. We should all, you know, work towards having this as a more balanced statistic. But yeah, it's also not an easy task.
It's not an easy task at all. But you have to, so the world is changing, and this is an issue we have to tackle. So you have a choice. Are you going to be a passenger, or are you going to jump in the driving seat and do something about it? And Radisson for sure has taken the second option. We are putting in a lot of effort to bridge that gap. We have started several programs. One that I'm excited about, we've called it Spotlight. Mm-hmm. And it's a sponsorship program. One of the things that has been seen as really helping women advance in their career has been sponsorship of senior management. Mm-hmm. So we know the difference in you know, the fact that we don't have more female GMs is not a capability issue. Women are exactly as capable of men as men. You know, this is not at all a capability issue. So what is the issue about? So one of the things that we wanted to work on was this notion of senior leadership sponsorship, which we kicked off about a year ago. We don't yet have the full data, mm-hmm. but I was looking at some of the cases that we have put through. It's a very simple sponsorship program, and we already see many of them taking role expansions. I can see a couple of promotions. So it does have an impact. At the end, you have to identify what are the barriers standing in the way and try and put them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I think these initiatives, what they have at the core is this like idea of support and trust, and we believe in you, and we will support, you know, you in any way to make you grow. And I think that's the most important thing that you have to convey to someone who is thinking about taking this step, or even like, you know, kind of imagining, because it is very frightful, and it is a challenge. So I mean, I grew up with a dad who was a GM for my early childhood years, and it's hard, you know. It's very time intensive, but it's definitely changing, and I can see it all around that you know, the also the whole idea of mental health, also not due to COVID, but COVID was an accelerator of this, that you also talk more about it, that it's more okay to talk about it. Again, like cultural surroundings, of course, play a massive role in this. In certain countries, it's, or in cultures, it's been more normalized, like in the US, where everyone has a therapist and goes twice a week. But then also now more and more in other countries, like you and companies as well, like initiatives have been popping up. And I do hope that they are here to stay, because it's a massive topic that we should all be talking more openly about, because that has an impact on like, how are you bringing your whole self to work or not? And I am a full believer that I think you are more energized and you can bring in more to your position if, you know, also in your private life and like in all aspects of your life, you feel energized. So I think if you can be yourself at work with your supervisor, with your leadership, then you will also pay in more into the company, and like everyone gets more off of it.
Yes, you definitely have to feel comfortable with who you are at work. I think at the end, you have to make the choices of what part of yourself do you bring to work and not, and how do you, you know, gel with the culture and your teams around and the expectations that are put on you, etc. And at the end, you have to be comfortable with who you are at work, 100%. And if not, of course, then you have to make a choice what you do with it. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things that we have been working very hard on, I think this is a push from a senior leadership that I think is differential, and that is this notion of management accountability. Mm-hmm. And I think there was quite a twist or turn in the late 90s and early 2000s, where there was a lot around careers where you know, books and gurus started saying, you know, it's the employee who owns their career. And careers became very complicated. So we moved from being one company, many jobs, etc., where the company basically told you, okay, you're in this job today, and let me tell you what next 10 jobs you're going to have in the next 25 years, to the companies going back and saying, actually, I have no idea what career you're going to have. And I have no tools to help you get there because I just don't know. And so companies, I think in that shift, basically stepped back and said, I'm going to lay some foundational stuff for you to, like some tools for you to use, but you deal with your career because I have no idea. And a lot of the literature at the time and a lot of the strategies that company were following, I feel, were around management and accountability. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I lay the foundations, but you drive your career. And what we're doing at Radisson is turning that back to management. And say, of course, the person has to own their, let's say, long-term ambition of who they want to become professionally. But it's management accountability to know what that ambition is and to put in the tools and measures, the support systems to help you get there. Mm-hmm. And so at Radisson, we do push our managers to have those conversations, understand the ambitions, help the employees verbalize those ambitions, because it's really hard to know where you want to be in 20 years' time, 10 years' time, even 5 years' time. And sometimes what you need is someone who can help you think, mm-hmm. What are the options, etc. And we've put that accountability on management, mm-hmm. And I think that's really making a difference. It doesn't take away the accountability of the employee. I mean, at the end, everyone has to manage their own career, but it becomes more of a partnership, mm-hmm. And it becomes it actually becomes much more agile because a manager is in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think partnership describes it really well, right? In the end, it's just about like showing the employees, hey, we are here for you and we want to do this together. And again, like opening this door, like, hey, I am listening. So if I trust you and you can trust me as well, if you share your dreams with me, then I'm not going to laugh. I'm going to be like, hey, let's look at this, you know, both of us together and see how we can make it work. And that's something very beautiful, I think, to if you manage to put this in place and make it more of a conversation, like a face-to-face or like same level kind of conversation. Hey, we're tackling this together, and not like, I don't think I can say this now because it's going to be received in the wrong way, or like that I'm unhappy with my current job, which is not true. So yeah, no, a partnership is a very, very, I think, a goal that we should strive for.
And we have to get better at having these conversations because we are not used to them. I always say that I used to work for a bed company, and I remember that realizing how difficult it is to buy a bed because we buy them on average every 10 years, some countries 15 years. And if you buy a bed every 10 years, you just don't have a habit of doing it. So you get to the bed shop and you don't know how to sit on the bed. You lay on the bed and it's like, I'm not sure, should I do like sideways? What am I looking for? Very difficult because you don't have the habit. And this is a little bit like that. If you don't have the habit of having these conversations, you just don't know how to do them. And the employee may tell you, well, I don't have an ambition for a job. I really want just experiences. And the manager doesn't know where to go from there. Mm-hmm. Or the employee says, I want your job. And the manager doesn't know where to go from there. So we need to help managers, you know, and employees, you know, teach them and help them become those career partners, and have an equal stake in that journey.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I could stay here forever and talk to you about these topics because it's so interesting. But we need to come to the last question. And for me, in my episodes, it's always the same. I usually ask my guests, what would you tell your 22-year-old self at the beginning of your career? And with you, this is actually really, really interesting because it's also just your job and your topic that you're so passionate about. What would you give them give yourself as a tip starting out in the industry?
I think the one thing I struggled most with when I started my career was disappointing people. I think disappointment is a work emotion that we don't talk about much. But it's a really strong motivator and demotivator in people's careers. And I think I was very early in my career very concerned with disappointing people around me. And I think it, on the bright side, it got me to work very hard on certain things, and because I didn't want to disappoint my bosses or my peers or whoever was looking. So I think that really pushed me to be better. But other times I think it just prevented me from being bolder or more riskier or from having more fun. And so I think what the advice I would give myself would be, I don't know, don't obsess over it. Or don't think people are looking at you so much. You're not that interesting. But I think that's what really I think held me back on those early years. And I think I would have been just a little bit more risk-taking, and perhaps life would have taken me to other places. Who knows?
I mean, I think you can be really proud and happy to where it led you, but it's a very good tip. Be bolder. Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been a lot of fun. And yeah, hopefully see you soon in person. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been great fun.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.